Welcome to our corner where we talk about the Streets of Avalon role-playing game. My name's Chris.
And I'm Brett.
And today we're going to be talking about one of the staples of many fantasy campaigns, cults. And when it comes to a city that's packed with people, you'll be hard-pressed to throw a cobblestone without hitting some kind of conspiracy. So that's what we're talking about in this episode.
I'll tell you what, when you talk about a noir-type setting, Maltese Falcon.
Yeah, the Maltese Falcon,
There, or the Two Jakes, or Chinatown.
I mean, Chinatown, yeah, you got there before I did.
There is something going on.
The long goodbye, right?
Yeah, there's something going on. There's a reason. There's something happening behind the scenes. Even if you watch something is like Old Man Fun is like Reacher on Amazon.
There's something.
That's a fun show. And there's something going on. Most of our plots, and there's a conspiracy of some kind. Not necessarily conspiracy theory that we never landed on the moon or that aliens, as it was told by one person at one point, that the Queen of England is a reptoid and he had proof, which was great. I love that conversation. It's one of my favorites.
Did you see the proof?
No, I didn't. He didn't have it with him, but he was going to show me next time. I know. That's where I went. Anyway, you have to have this stuff. And when you have an area, a city like this, where it's big, it's dark, it's gritty, it's all that noir type feeling. Your cults are like your gangs. People get together for all sorts of different reasons. A gang, a lot of times, is, you can look it up, right? It's family, belonging, and so on and so forth. And sometimes it's like, hey, we're a bunch of like-minded assholes, like to beat people and take stuff. This is a great idea, right?
Sounds like a thieves' guild.
Could be a thieves' guild, exactly. They do a little sneakier, then there's the, or whatever.
It sounds like a thieves' guild that specializes in protection rackets.
Exactly. So when you talk about your cults, you've got the cult of Erlig. It's very popular insofar as within Avalon when you build it, because Erlig is the bad guy. He is the evil entity god thing.
I love Cthulhu, that bad guy. He's my favorite.
Cthulhuid entity that's going to eat the world.
That's why he's my favorite.
Smaller cults are things that like, hey, I worship this weird slime god, or we have found favor with this weird little tentacled cat thing that speaks to us and promises us great wisdom.
God in quotes.
Yes, God in quotes. All in quotes. We have discovered this hand that when we ask it questions, it gesticulates.
Oh man, that's so fun.
In certain ways to show us yes and no.
Ooh, is it a thing that you've done? Because that's cool.
I've not done that.
I'm stealing that somewhere.
Do it. When you have that, a bunch of people gathered around a thing, whether that be a demagogue, somebody who's preaching to them or telling them they know a way, or they've found their variation of a magic eight ball, like, ooh, I can ask this in questions. I can receive guidance. What do I have to give in return for the guidance? Well, the first one's free. The second one is, well, it seems to work better if I bleed on it. Well, it doesn't like my blood anymore. I bet you would like Dan's blood. Dan, get over here, son of a bitch.
I love that escalation. Like, oh, yeah. here's a little bit of taste of power, a little bit of taste of power. I love doing stuff like that, by the way. Those are my favorite kind of curse items.
And that's where your small cult becomes the conspiracy. Because now it's a group of people that are no longer amongst themselves huddling around their magic eight ball, shaking it and asking it questions. They now have to step outside of that little group and they have to start bothering other people. They start getting bigger. They start digging into other things. The cult can go out and sacrifice a person, as they do, killing dogs, cats, using the blood of a rat, something along, and you know, a stillborn piglet's heart blood is used to do this thing. Okay, that's a very culty, weird, bullshitty thing to do. Where it gets conspiracies when they have to step outside of all that stuff and they start operating to push their goals and their agendas onto others around them. Why are they doing that? What's this magic eight ball causing to be done? Or why are they doing this? Now they're no longer like, hey, we're just going to start doing this thing. Now we're going to take over this inn because this inn sells booze and booze is evil. Or we're going to try to get this carpenter who is, you know, causing us no end of grief. We're going to run him out of the neighborhood and take over his place. And if people see us and see how good we did, and we'll bring the glory of the Magic 8 Ball to them, they will see that the Magic 8 Ball drove us to take this man out of town.
Oh, I think that's interesting. So so the cult part, I'm digging all this cult stuff, because I think you nailed it, right? Like, it's a sense of belonging. They make you feel, like, indebted to this thing, and you have something that you're, like, an ideology or an object or some activity that is surrounding that. You could take a look at tribalism if you want for some of that stuff, but some of the stuff can feel, when you get too extreme with it, it feels culty, right? Like, that's, and I love
where
that.
It gets evil culty is where it promises you something. If you do these things, you are chosen. You and your fellow cult members will be the ones in charge. All of those others are not worthy to be here holding the Magic 8 Ball with you. That is why it is the five of you who are the inner circle of the eye of the eight, and you will therefore see the thing that no one else can see. And now, next thing you know, you're in charge of people who also wish to be part of the inner circle, and so on. It gets weird, and a lot of it gets weird because of the people you're pulling on are in times of need and crisis, and they're looking for something. In a city like Avalon, finding hope is huge. Your characters, if they're doing the hero type of track, they're little beacons of hope. You've got the lamplighters with actual physical lights of hope. You've got the Liche, who are a force of good. There's stability. There's some hope there. When that's not enough, or they can't get the access to the hope that they need, people look for it somewhere and they want to find this stuff. And as cults grow, they need power. They need stuff. They need to maintain, right? Very few people or very few cults are just happy having all five people stare at the magic eight ball. They've got to do something extra. It's going to grow. It's going to expand.
And then so they start preying on people who just are looking for something a little bit more, or outsiders, are downtrodden. And boy, are there lots of those kind of people on the streets of Avalon.
Now, the mob of Kali, we've talked about I think we may have talked about them, but they worship the goddess Kali, and they're very chaotic and kind of wild. And they take on that aspect of Kali's chaos, the restructuring, the regrowth, and the quote unquote insanity that goes with that type of chaos. Now, is that an evil cult, this mob of Kali? No, they're not. They are a force to be reckoned with because they're a force of change. When they show up, they're there to do stuff. In my current Avalon game, the guys are in a situation where they have to deal with some ghouls, a massive problem. It's huge. It turns out this probably been the underpinning thing, which it is, that they have to sort out. And the mob of Kali rolled in the neighborhood. They went, oh, fuck, I do not need this. They went, talked to the leader, and the leader, in a odd, like, immediate state of focus, was like, you need to do this thing. When you call us, we will be there. How do we call you? And then he just kind of walked off. Like, all right, I guess I'm just going to show up. But he's like, all right, we're coming. Well, we will aid you in your time of need. And then they just kind of rambled off and did their thing.
It's always good to have the weird fervent berserkery type people on your side when you need to kill some ghouls, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. If you want to go fight the undead, I'll have a bunch of zeal of the converted priests. I'll take them every day, right? But the other things that happen is you've got, when I bring them up, because are they evil? No, they're weird. They can be helpful and they might be harmful. Depends how you use them as the character, how you play it, what you want to do with it. Other groups, you've got people who are absolutely sycophantically connected to this nobleman. Whatever that nobleman does, they can do no wrong. They're all about them. They basically treat them like a demigod walking the earth. When they come to bring forth their lord's will, they speak with absolute reverence and so forth and so on, and they want to bring your characters in to perform this deed of the highest honor, which is obviously for lords thus and such, and you will do this so that way lady thus and so will be wed with him and blah, blah, blah. Like, this is just weird. You guys are really just over the top believing this line. He is the last of the emperor's blood. Therefore you must. Oh, all right. Fine.
Oh man. Just believing in a thing, right? Like, yes. Once again, finding an ideology or a belief or something to follow because you feel like you need to be part of something.
The other fun piece when it comes to cults is lycanthropy. We've talked about that a little bit. If you've got rat men, I've had werebores. There's the Beast of London. I believe it's an actual myth, like this big cow that got into the sewers and whatnot within London.
I didn't know that. That's hilarious.
And it's in Neverwhere by Neil Gaiman. I think it's a real one.
Or yes, modified. Yes, it is. You were correct. It's modified. The beast is down there. Yeah, it's slightly modified for Neverwhere.
Yeah, but down there, I've used Gorgons, like the D&D style Gorgon, to mock that up because it was fun. But when you have a group of people that are they're downtrodden and so forth, and they don't know how they're lycanthropes. This werebore family is down there and they just live. They're doing the best they can where they can. They have problems because when the phases strike them or the hunger hits them or whatnot, they've got issues to deal with, but they're very culty. They stick very close together and they can be incredibly dangerous, especially when the matron dies and she's been the one controlling them and saying, look, we will feed this way. We'll organize this. We must stay undercover. We must be hidden. And then the new blood shows up and she's like, that's not how it rolls, kids. Everyone above us is food. They are weaker than us. We've been down here too long and so forth. And now they start coming out. They have a weird altar. And because Erlig himself is, through the mythology I stole him from, has a boar's-like head and human body type of things. They will see him as a god. He is their werebore god, and therefore they are blessed of him. And the old matron was like, no, we're cursed. This has nothing to do with that. This is a weird blood thing. Don't know what the fuck it is. Talk to 16 alchemists. They can't solve it. But these other guys, like, no, we're going past science. We're going right to fervent occult belief in the most horrible deity ever. Because that's the only way to go. Yeah.
It seems bad.
Yeah.
But it's something they can connect to because Erlik exactly. looks like them, right? Like the effigies of Erlik give them some amount of connection. I also really like the thing that you threw in there, which is like...
Hey folks, Chris here. I just wanted to jump in and say we are part of the Polygamerist Podcast Network. And with that, there's some great shows in the Polygamerist Podcast Network that you might want to listen to, like Thaco with Advantage. Ange and Jared love talking about RPGs and D&D. Together, they share insights into the games they're running in the campaign journal and then tackle a variety of topics that affect the game in the DM's workshop. They're going to talk anyway, so they might as well record it. Maybe you'll even pick up an ancient D&D factoid about a previous edition of the game that you'll never use.
I also really like the thing that you threw in there, which is like, there is a group of people that have a very insular belief structure, and then some outside force after a leader is vacates the spot, comes in and shifts the belief structure to be something else, often, usually not better. It's often more violent, more darker, with darker intents.
Yes. When I had the Hammerites, our weird little organization that are they're from the Church of Odin / Church of Enlightenment. They kind of are a little parasitic cultish organization, and they believe that
screw those guys, by the way.
And they believe that, you know, Thor, the nastiest, meanest, stupid version of Thor, is the best and only true archetype of Odin himself, and Odin is a perversion thereof, and therefore they're going to drive that. Like, what weird zealous fervor? Where did this come from?
Take but they've got goats and leave.
Exactly. So what's cool now is I have these weird little cult groups and I got some weird shit going on, but when you start weaving that stuff together, you get these wonderful conspiracies. How the hell, wait a minute, that matron from the werebores, she was murdered. She didn't die. Who killed her? Well, in their little clan, you find it's illegal, immoral. They can't kill each other. But a priest of Erlig came in and subverted the new matron and then gave poison to, like, okay, why'd they do that? Well, because they're going to cause this problem while the Church of Erlig is also over here trying to organize this other little thing. So it's like these small pawns just being moved. Cults make wonderful little throwaway bad guys.
Always come up with more cults.
Exactly. Who's pulling the strings behind it? Why is the cult behaving this way? Well, they just want power, money, and thus and such. How'd they get that magic eight ball to begin with? Who gave that to them? Oh, so-and-so just happened to find it at the end of this dead-end alley with a door slightly ajar and there's green glow inside and chanting? He just happened to be there? Really? And then when he walked in, there was nothing but a glowing eight ball? I don't believe it. No, that's the story he tells. Uh-huh. The story he tells.
For the listeners at home, what Brett is illuminating is that a conspiracy is a secret plan by a group to do something unlawful or harmful.
Exactly.
They have an agenda. They have a goal, and you don't know who they are, and they're just using pawns and moving around. We talked about the conspiracy earlier. Great way to structure your conspiracies, but man, do I love a good conspiracy. And I find that the streets of Avalon is rife for this kind of stuff because of all the politics and backstabbing and maneuvering that happens both on a legal and illegal level in the city.
Anytime you've got people, they want to jockey for a position, they want to make a thing happen. And it's not like, I'm just going to go buy that. I don't have the money. I'll just go take it. Well, how do you take it? Well, I got to get these guys to do this, to do this, to do this, to do this. Is there a vacuum? Is there a power vacuum as in the magistrates where the 13th house is not currently seated? Well, nature and gamers abhor a vacuum. We start filling it with conspiracies. Who's doing it? Why are they doing it? What's going on behind the scenes? Who wants to destabilize, restabilize, or believes they're restabilizing when in fact they're destabilizing?
Or in the case of the cult of Erlig, create enough negative effects to put together a magic circle to take out a whole section of lamps in a city.
Yeah, and then eventually, you know, to allow their horrible god to devour what's left of reality.
Sure. That's just like step one to doing that, right? Like
step one, step two in between there's a little fuzzy, mostly profit.
mostly profit and death.
Yeah, I think you're right. I have found that most plots, even a heist in a way, you can tag a conspiracy onto it.
How's that? Yeah.
Well, go steal the thing. Why am I stealing it? How did it get there anyway? What's this about? Who's connected? Conspiracies are all about tying the, not necessarily loose ends, but tying things together that are not always obviously tied together.
Yeah, to some higher end organization that has an agenda. They have a plan that they're trying to accomplish. Whatever that might be, right? It could be like, well, the magistrate houses, they just want to keep power. Like that is, and they often do it openly, but they also do it a lot of times secretly by keeping other noble houses down by maneuvering their pawns all over the place.
One of my favorite things to do when it comes to conspiracies too is to do small local ones. And the reason I do that is because, well, the characters and players are getting used to the setting and figuring things out. If you're going to save the world every session, like, dude, this is getting boring. I just saved it. But what you can do when you can start to tie the small ones together into a grander one, if there's interest, if that's where the story wants to go. Example. So they start out and Marianne runs X Guild and she's trying to increase her power in that guild. And the only way to do that is to increase her income. So to increase her income to the guild, so forth, she has made a bargain with the local thieves guild where they're going to give her a cut. Well, what's Mary's guild? She's a carpenter's guild. She's got plans for just about everybody's bloody building in this neighborhood. She can help them get in and out. She just needs a cut that's going to help her out. Maybe favors later, but this will be fine. Somebody else is trying to fix a problem. They're trying to reestablish something. They want to open up the inn that got closed down and they want to rebuild. They want to do something good. Well, to do that though, what do they have to do to make that happen? Well, they don't own the building. They got to go get the building from so-and-so. They got to make something happen. So they can ostensibly be trying to do good things. That's all they're talking about. Just going to do good things. You're going to grow my guild. I'm going to fix this part of the neighborhood. But how they're going about it is the shady shit behind the scenes. And it can be very local. And I've had that, I've run that, and then someone usually in the party gets the bright idea to go, who heads the Carpenter's Guild? Well, Mary. No. Who's Mary's boss? Oh, I mean, Thomas. Yeah, Thomas. Yeah, two thumbs Thomas? Yeah, two thumbs Thomas. All right. Go talk to Thomas. Oh, do you have any proof? We'll talk about proof later. Let's go talk to Thomas. All right, interesting.
I just put the word in his ear and see what happens.
Exactly. So sometimes that happens. They look for, like, they try to find a quick way end around. If they're digging the conspiracy, like, oh, I want to go talk to Two Thumbs. They talk to him and like, he won't act against her because he likes the money and he doesn't care about the neighborhood. All right, that's a problem. Well, who hates the Carpenter's Guild? Well, stonemasons aren't happy with him because, okay, we could pull. And next thing, like, oh, shit, I'm in the conspiracy. How the hell did we? And I've had that happen. We're like, you guys are just as bad as the conspiracists.
Yep.
You brought in a whole new group of people to fight them. It just gets weird.
No, it's good. Like that is reminds me of episodes of Leverage in a lot of ways. Like those are a lot of times things, the plots that you get an hour in Leverage end up being stuff like that. Like the one with the funeral home, they were running scams, taking people who were dead and like reselling their identities to other people. Once again, it's right in there. And then somebody gets hurt and then they go and get somebody else to help it. And then, you know, then there's hero work being done by the Leverage crew. But it's stuff like that. Like I love that Carpenter story. That's such a good one. Did you do that or just make that up?
I just made that up.
Yeah, man. Yeah. Like, especially if we can connect it to that inn too, right? Yep. Now we have multiple levels. Like we have to go to Mary because Mary knows who that inn owner, we'll call him Smith. He's not very good at running that inn. It's kind of dilapidated and whatnot. And this couple, the Robinsons, they really would like to own this place. They have some money. They could potentially buy it, but Smith won't sell.
Correct. So somebody's got to get a lever on Smith and pry that inn out of his hands, right?
Mm-hmm. So Mary has connections with the Thieves Guild now because she's giving them plans so they can steal things. Preferably if Mary's doing it smart, she's not necessarily doing it in the neighborhood that she's primarily operating out of. She's working it from the neighborhoods, the buildings in the neighborhoods that are around her neighborhood. Correct. So that they're not stealing from here. All these other places are getting poorer, but funneling money into the space. But it's interesting, right? Like all those pieces can go together.
And that's why I say when I start small with them, then like, oh, cool, we solved it. The other cool thing that happens there is when you solve that first small conspiracy, there's a wonderful feeling like we fixed that damn problem. That's just awesome. We solved it. Even if the bad guy gets away, they run. They're like, curse you. You wave your fist at them as they flee. But two, three conspiracies in, it's very natural for players to go, is this shit connected? Which is your sign. If they say that, like, ding, they want it to be connected.
Then you got to go find the connections, which human it's brains not hard. Feel good at that.
Not, yes, exactly. Which is why, you know, people look at the moon and go, is that a pyramid? Is that a face? Is that a this? Because we build patterns for pattern finding machines. And as players pull those patterns together, I also don't mind players sometimes if they go for a while on their own self-induced red herring, I'll eventually stop them because, like, guys, you're off the
you're
gonna be really frustrated in about 5 minutes here, boys. Back it down.
We're not gonna go that way. That's not
That's just mean. But when you have it and you run a couple and you're like, you know, it would be really cool. Like the next step for this camp, the campaign's going really well. We've got some really good stories happening here. I think a really good idea would be to tie some of the smaller things together. So if you're taking your notes, if you're paying attention to the small conspiracies you've run, who's been charged, keep those names, who escaped, who didn't, who maybe up the chain knew something, but they never got to him, right? So Two Thumbs was never talked to, but suddenly he's kind of mad. Why is that? Well, Mary died and I can't get, you know, the new person I put in, she's not pulling in any cash. Like, Mary, what the hell was Mary doing that was making all that money? I'm losing status here. I was an up and coming, you know, guild master, you know, at the higher levels, and suddenly my cut's gone. What the fuck is going on? So he rolled, Two Thumbs rolls in the neighborhood. What's happening? What's going on here? Like, okay, wait a minute. How's this getting bigger? So as I say, I can grow the thing faster than I can trim it back. So if you start in that smallish area and it grows and expands a little bit, and it's wonderful when you stomp a small conspiracy to have the next level above come in and start sniffing around, and that'll get people working. That'll make your players going, holy shit, what did we get into? What did we get ourselves into this time, boys and girls? Because it could get scary.
So we record these things in batches, everybody. It is, when you hear this, it'll be much later than when we recorded it. I haven't written the campaign chapter yet, like how to organize and structure campaigns. I think conspiracies is going to be one of the primary ways to do it. Like, here's how you can campaign your game together using conspiracies. And Brett illustrated a very good way to do it, which is, if you don't know what the experiment is, it's like small blocks that go up to a higher level, but you can do that, fractal it down. So if you want, your conspiracy can be like four pieces. There's something at the top and they're all just kind of connected by lines, and you have to understand how those connections work and what they're getting from each other and what their goal is.
That's one of the reasons why shows like Leverage, those 1 hour shows, the 20 minutes, half hour, it doesn't need to be the attempt at X-Files to be this all encompassing thing.
Yeah.
It doesn't need to be that, because, oh my God, how many seasons did they go too long? Different problem. Anyway, a few too many. A small conspiracy is a great way to set something up that is solvable, that you can manage, right? Because for God's sakes, if you look at actual conspiracies, big ones, one of the reasons some of that shit collapses is because it collapses under its own weight. It's unmanageable. It just gets so big. It's trying to be so secret. It's so difficult. At a certain point, you do a Hell's Angels, like, man, you know, three can keep a secret if two are dead. So we got to trim this down. But your small start there is wonderful, because in a city like Avalon, we talk about the people, the politics, interpoliticking, and so forth. Conspiracies are a natural event that are going to happen. And those conspiracies can lead you into Thorbrandor. They can lead you right into the sewers. They can lead you into that lost little forbidden place at the back of the alleyway where the cult lives. Son of a gun, there's the cult again. You know?
And like Brett said, as soon as you want to take it up a notch, it's not that hard, because there's always somebody that's just above the people that you were dealing with that was either benefiting or being hurt by the thing that they were doing. So therefore, when you alter what they've been up to, that will alter them and they will change the situation. Which can make your lives either easier or harder, depending.
And if you're paying attention to your characters, and as that table sourcing happens, either advertently or inadvertently, where they're throwing ideas at, boy, wouldn't it be weird if this was really the coal guild? Wouldn't this really be odd if it was actually the Wainwrights? Wouldn't it be weird if it was the barrel makers? That would be weird, man. And somehow, some way, you like, okay, interesting. Note. Those diamonds, when they're spitting them at you at the table, you got to write that down. And I'm not saying that as that's not an order, but I'm saying a strong suggestion is good when it's a good piece. When those things happen like that, that gives you stuff. So like Chris said, when you want to expand it, you want to grow it, you've got stuff to work with it. Your players helped land. They helped put the numbers, the names, the things out there. And it's fun to find out they're right.
You never have to use it as they said it. You could just use it and modify it a little bit, and it'll let you put your own spin on it.
Exactly.
Makes them feel good. Makes them feel like that you're paying attention. Makes them feel like they're smart. And that's
absolutely
creates engagement. All right. Well, man, that I love a good conspiracy. I suppose you could say.
Thank you for listening to Under the Lamplight, the Streets of Avalon role-playing game podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please follow or subscribe on whatever podcatcher you listen to this on. If you'd like to get the playtest book or keep up with the ongoing development of the game, check out thestreetsofavalon.com, our home for all your Streets of Avalon content. and we'll see you under the lamplight next week.